It's the morning show. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Kate Archer Kent. In the late 1800s, wildlife in America was in trouble. The great forests had been clear-cut, widespread indiscriminate hunting had driven several species to the brink of extinction, and entire colonies of birds had been wiped out for feathers for ladies' hats. Then responsible hunters joined with conservationists and an activist president, Theodore Roosevelt, and came up with a path forward. Land would be set aside for public use. Wildlife would be managed and protected thanks to license fees and taxes on guns and ammunition paid by the hunters themselves. That system worked well for decades, but now it's in trouble. The number of hunters is declining, and with them, the money they contribute to the cause of conservation. Only 5% of Americans 16 or older hunt, and that's less than half the number 50 years ago. Where will the money come from for wildlife management, and what does the loss of our hunting tradition mean for our culture in Wisconsin? To answer these questions, we've got a couple of guests this hour. A little later in the show, we'll be talking with Teresa Stabot of the Department of Natural Resources. But first, we welcome Adina Rissman. She's an associate professor of the human dimensions of ecosystem management in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison. We want to hear from you as well. Are you a hunter? Why or why not? What hunting traditions have you followed? Maybe you're against hunting. Why are you against it if you're against it? And what are your hopes for wildlife conservation in Wisconsin? We'd like to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can send us an email at ideas@wpr.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Well, Adina, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Glenn. My pleasure. Great to be here.
Well, let's get right into this survey by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services. It shows that today only about 5% of Americans 16 years of age or older actually hunt. What's your reaction to that?
Well, as you said, just 5% of Americans are hunting who are over the age of 16, but that's still 11 million people. So it may not sound like a large percentage, but it's still a strong and important tradition. It is one that's declined, though, and that's important for wildlife conservation funding because the license fees and stamps that hunters pay into conservation are an important source of the funding for wildlife management programs. Now, for people who are not hunters, they might think that hunting is somehow bad for wildlife, but it turns out that hunting is a strong part of the wildlife conservation story in the United States and many other countries when it's managed sustainably as it is here, and that populations of species, wildlife species that are managed as game, which means for hunting, such as deer and turkeys, have rebounded and are doing extremely well.
I live in northern Wisconsin, and a few decades ago, you wouldn't see any wild turkeys at all, and they are everywhere now, everywhere.
That's right. Turkeys are one of the big wildlife success stories. They were actually extirpated from the state. There weren't any here in Wisconsin, and they were reintroduced in 1976 by the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And now, you know, you see them crossing the road in an urban area, kind of going where they want to go.
And not only in urban areas, but they take up a lot of space in front of my bird feeders, which is amusing early in the morning, seeing a flock of turkeys out your backyard.
Yeah, absolutely. They're everywhere in Wisconsin now. So yeah.
Well, let's dig a little deeper into this survey by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services. How was it conducted, and what was their mission or their goal in conducting the survey?
So state agencies, like here in Wisconsin, our Department of Natural Resources, are responsible for managing game and wildlife overall, for the most part. And so all the state agencies in the country have asked the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service at the federal level to track some of the numbers in terms of who's watching wildlife, who's fishing, who's hunting, and what are the trends. And so the Fish and Wildlife Service, every 5 years, works with the Census Bureau to count the number of people who are involved in hunting, fishing, and wildlife watching. And they do this by sampling a small proportion of the American public, and they conduct in-depth interviews with about 6,000 individuals.
And how do the numbers, this 5%, compare to recent decades?
Well, there's been a decline in the last decade. So they do this survey every 5 years. So back in 2006, there were 12.5 million hunters or people who participated in hunting in that year. And that compares to 11.5 million in 2016. But because hunting is a small proportion of the population, there is some variability in the survey sampling over time. So the Census Bureau and the Fish and Wildlife Service have said that's not a statistically significant decline over that one decade. But we know that there has been a decline in hunter numbers over the last several decades.
And is that accurate, about 50% now of what it used to be?
I believe so. It gets a little harder to compare the numbers because the survey methodology changed in the 1990s. So going back farther in time, it gets less accurate. But that's the number that I've heard as well.
Well, how many people hunt in Wisconsin?
Well, in this last year, there were close to 600,000 licenses sold just for deer. And that's one of the biggest opportunities for hunters is during the deer season. And of those, about 200,000 people brought in deer.
And how significant are these 600,000 people to our culture in Wisconsin? You know, 600,000 is a minority of the people in Wisconsin, but hunting has been a tradition here just about forever.
That's right. Hunting is really integral to rural life and life in the outdoors in Wisconsin. And if you are driving around in the countryside or driving around near your small hometown in Wisconsin during gun deer season in particular, you're going to see signs of hunting all over the place. And that's something that people who are living in more urban centers may not necessarily recognize, but it's a really fundamental part of Wisconsin tradition, and it goes back generation to generation. Some families may have cabins where their grandparents went, you know, their grandfathers passing along that tradition to them. It's a time when many people may take off work. Traditionally, kids were coming out of school to go hunting during that time. And that is both a sport and a family tradition, as well as an important source of food for many people.
You know, hunting is hard work. In a deer hunt, you have to wake up early. You walk into the woods. You're outside for hours in the cold. And when you shoot a deer, you have to track it down. You have to gut it. Then you have to drag the carcass out of the forest. You have to strap it to the top of your car or put it in the back of your truck and then drive it to a meat processing facility. Do young people today have the time or the patience or the commitment for that kind of activity?
Well, many people do, and we're seeing an increasing interest in hunting among young people, say, in college, who may be interested in learning more about where their food comes from and get more connected to that process, who are taking classes in butchering, for instance, and really trying to get to know that source of their meat. But yeah, as you said, it is a lot of work, and many people don't have the time or the funds or the commitment to do it, and I think that's part of why we've seen hunter numbers decline.
Are there other reasons beside that?
Sure. Well, I think overall in our society, attitudes toward wildlife, worldviews about wildlife have changed. And so people tend to see wildlife now as something that is maybe not there for our food as much as there for its own value or there to be beautiful or to have a spiritual value. So you can see certainly looking at trends about people's ideas of wildlife over time, we've seen some of these broader shifts. So I think that's part of it. But I think for many people who may be interested in hunting, there's just a difficulty with the logistics of getting out into the woods to do it.
And some people, as you mentioned, have a different view of wildlife, and they've got a knee-jerk reaction against hunting. You know, they say we want to protect Bambi, we don't want to shoot Bambi. How do you talk to those people?
Well, so one of my friends was telling me the story that, and she's not a hunter, and she had said to a friend of hers who she knew was going hunting, she said, oh, you know, she was joking around with him. She liked the guy, but she said, oh, well, have fun killing Bambi. And he said to her, well, I know where my meat comes from. Do you? And she's not a vegetarian. You know, she said, oh, okay. She was surprised by that. And then he said, when I have a bad hunting year, my family still eats because I have a job, but we don't eat that meat. And that's important to us. It's special to us. It's part of our family's tradition. And she said, oh, well, now every year when I see him at the end of the season, I say, how was your year this year? How was your hunting? Because she really took that and changed her perspective based on having that real, honest conversation.
Our guest today on The Morning Show is Adina Rissman. She's an associate professor of the Human Dimensions of Ecosystem Management in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Kate Archer Kent. We'll be back with more on the decline of hunting in Wisconsin and America. But first, this news. And it is The Morning Show. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Kate Archer Kent. We're talking about the decline of hunting in Wisconsin and America and the dilemma that poses for wildlife conservation, which has traditionally depended on money generated by hunters. Our guest today is Adina Rissman. She is an associate professor of the Human Dimensions of Ecosystem Management in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. We want to hear from you. Are you a hunter? Why or why not? If you are a hunter, what do you get out of it? What hunting traditions have you followed? If you're against hunting, we'd like to hear from you as well. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go right to the phones here. We've got a call from Kevin in Crandon. Kevin, you're on The Morning Show.
Hey, Glenn, here's a knee-jerk reaction for you. Hunting bears with dogs, leaving bait piles out for deer, the trapping, which I'm really against. I think the hunters should have stick one of their legs in their traps and see how that feels. I don't think it's very manly at all, to be honest with you. And animals were here a long time before any of us ever were, and they have to live, too. And, I'm not impressed with the whole hunting thing at all. Where I'm up here in Crandon, it's really huge, and it's just, they don't impress me a bit, and that's all I got to say.
Well, Crandon is in Forest County in the northern part of the state. Hunting is a big tradition there, but not for Kevin, Adina.
Sure. Well, Kevin, thanks for your call. As you mentioned, there's a lot of different types of hunting and trapping, and we've talked about deer hunting, but as you mentioned, there's bear hunting, hunting for coyotes and other species as well. And look, these are really impassioned issues. People feel strongly about how we treat animals and what kinds of methods and approaches are appropriate and valid. And as you mentioned, you know, what's manly, that's been a big part of the history of hunting as well. And this question of what is appropriate and what isn't. And one of the ways that these rules are debated is at the spring hearings for the Wisconsin Conservation Congress. And I'm not aware of the specific issues that Kevin mentioned being on the ballot, but on Monday, April 9th, there is an advisory survey that anyone can come to these meetings and weigh in on, and they do involve some issues around trapping, such as beavers on private land. So if people are interested, they can attend these meetings and share their voice and their concern at these meetings, which are advisory. The DNR then takes that input and can make recommendations to the Natural Resources Board from that.
An advisory question at one of those meetings in previous years was whether or not we should have a hunt for sandhill cranes. In our state, conservationists, at least some of them, feared that hunters would shoot endangered whooping cranes by mistake.
That's right, and that continues to be an issue that we're going to probably hear more about. Should we have a sandhill crane hunt? The sandhill crane population has really recovered to the point where they themselves could withstand a hunt. But there's that concern, and it has happened in other states, that people might accidentally shoot a whooping crane by mistake.
And we've only got, what, about 350 of them in the world? So if you shoot one or two of them, that's a big problem.
That is a big problem. There's only about 100 in the population here in Wisconsin.
Let's go back to the phones. We have Dan in Green Bay. Dan, you're on The Morning Show.
Yes, good morning. I just would like to say that I'm in my 70s now. I've been hunting for just about 50 years up north, pretty far up. And And basically, I recommend the younger hunters don't even bother anymore. I don't believe in the DNR. Their reports about that how many deer are actually up north. The wolf kill, they don't say much about that because they darn well know that that wrecked a lot of hunting when they released the wolves and then they introduced them. And then they said, oh, now we got too many, so we have to hunt them. And then they took them off, and then they bring them back. And I have to say, I've been, you know, hunting for, you know, 40-plus years, and the last 10 years have been terrible. I mean terrible. And I do not support the DNR in anything they say anymore. A lot of us feel like that. A lot of us older hunters feel like that because we know that the population of the deer has decreased dramatically. I mean dramatically. Same thing with fishing. Same thing. I'd like to hear your response.
All right, Dan, thanks so much for the phone call. And Dan says the wolves were hunted, and then we took them off the list and brought them back on. Well, we haven't brought them back on yet.
Well, so I want to address a couple of things in Dan's comment. One is about this trust of the DNR. That's something that you hear a lot in Wisconsin, is that people don't necessarily trust the DNR. One of the things that has changed is that now a lot of hunting is managed at a local level within counties. So if people are not happy with what DNR is saying, they can go to that county level in the county deer advisory councils and weigh in at that local level to say, should population levels for deer be increasing or decreasing or maintain the same, and to affect the quotas that way. So one of the things that's happened is that we've moved away from just one expert agency making decisions to a lot of real local grassroots efforts. Now, on the wolf, I do want to say that the DNR did not reintroduce the wolf. It recolonized Wisconsin just coming over on its own from Minnesota. But as Dan mentioned, there's been a lot of confusion with the wolf going on and off again for the endangered species list. And that's made it real difficult for the DNR and the Fish and Wildlife Service and everyone else to manage the species. That's not something that the DNR chose to do, but it's something that that has happened and really complicated that management, with court cases making their way through the process.
Do you believe that wolves should be taken off the endangered list, and do you think a hunting season for them would be beneficial in Wisconsin?
Well, that's a big question, and it's one that, as we heard earlier on WPR, is being debated at the federal level in Congress as well. Everybody's been really amazed by the recovery of wolves, that's happened quite rapidly, and you know their population could withstand a hunt, but if that hunt was done sustainably to maintain that population. Now, the question of should they be taken off the list, that's one that you have to kind of think about the precedent. Well, it may make sense for the Great Lakes distinct population segment to be delisted. Unfortunately, that Great Lakes distinct population segment was never listed as a specific unit. So the wolf was one of the earliest species listed, and they listed the entire timber wolf across the entire East Coast. And the courts have said there's no precedent to just delist one part if the whole thing was listed to begin with. So we're in a bit of a quandary now with how to manage that population, because I think from Dan's comment and others, in many ways it would be nice to manage that population here in Wisconsin and across the Lake States.
But do you think Dan is right that wolves have decreased the number of deer to the point where hunters are having trouble finding them? That you know, you hear that comment from hunters a lot, but you also hear that idea being disputed by a number of people.
Well, that's true. You know, and the models that show from Tim Van Dielen, who's a deer biologist and wildlife biologist in my department and others, show that wolves are killing some number of deer, but not the number of deer that are causing a change to the population. Yeah. And there's other factors that are much more significant in terms of affecting deer populations. But the deer populations remain high, and those levels have remained fairly stable.
And this is something that cuts across a number of cultures in Wisconsin as well. Ranchers are upset with wolves because of the predation of some of their cattle and some of their animals. But our tribes, our Indian tribes, view wolves as a sacred animal and have really been quite vocal in their opposition to taking them off the endangered species list.
That's right. And I would say wolves in Wisconsin is one of the most fundamental issues that gets at these different core values or views about wildlife. And, you know, it's easy to focus on many of these differences, but I guess I would suggest that people really try to keep an open mind and listen, because respecting differences, it's important in a marriage, it's important in a relationship, it's also important in a democracy when we need to live together and figure out how to listen to each other.
We're talking about hunting in Wisconsin, 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. I'm Glenn Moberg in for Kate Archer Kent with Adina Rissman. Adina, this is the 100th anniversary of the Migratory Bird Treaty, which is something that protects birds as they cross international boundaries and state boundaries and province boundaries and in Canada. Comment on that and how important that treaty has been over the past 100 years for wildlife conservation.
Well, the Migratory Bird Treaty, as you mentioned, is one of our fundamental pieces of wildlife law from 100 years ago, and we are celebrating the centennial this year. It helps to protect many, many species of migratory birds, everything from cranes to ducks to songbirds. And right now, the Migratory Bird Treaty Act is also been responsible for helping secure funding if there is a loss of birds. So, for instance, after the Deepwater Horizon drilling rig explosion a few years ago in the Gulf of Mexico, they were able to work within the Migratory Bird Treaty to require the payment of a lot of money into conservation to help restore bird populations that were damaged by that explosion. And that was a million birds killed. And the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, there are some concerns that some of those protections may be declining now due to changes that are either proposed in Congress or by the administration.
Let's talk about how we're going to fund wildlife conservation. If we don't have the number of hunters that we used to have and some of the traditional means of funding wildlife conservation are not available, you mentioned before that people's attitudes toward wildlife appear to be changing. While we don't have a lot of hunters, we've got a lot of people outside. We've got campers, we've got kayakers, canoers, we've got bird watchers, we've got shutterbugs, people who take their cameras out into the woods in the hope of capturing that prey in a different way. Do you think it's possible for us to harness some of those sources, potential sources for revenue, to protect the wildlife that they obviously so much enjoy?
Well, that's a great point and a great question. As hunter numbers decline, wildlife conservationists are increasingly seeking other sources of revenue. And there are efforts around the country to bring in revenue from sales taxes or lottery taxes or special fees for stamps or license plates. But there's really a lot of money coming in from hunter license fees and fishing license fees, and a need to match that in some other way. And for many people who may be hiking or bird watching or canoeing, they expect these things to be free. But what they may not realize is that by not paying into them, and they're not bringing that revenue source into the management to be helping produce the wildlife that they want to see, but they're also not gaining as big of a stake in the process of decision making for what happens with wildlife.
What about funding wildlife conservation more from the general revenue fund in the state of Wisconsin, or having more money earmarked for it on a national level? I mean, wildlife benefits everybody, even people who don't go out in the woods. We all benefit from a healthy ecosystem.
Well, that's true. And one of the big proposals that we're looking at federally right now is there was a big Blue Ribbon Commission to look at funding sources for wildlife, and they recommended that funds from oil and gas revenue be used and dedicated to wildlife funding. One of the things that people might not know is that there are important sources of funding from the federal level that come from an excise tax on hunting, equipment, ammunition, and on the fishing side from boats and fishing equipment and fuel. And those go into funds that help the states fund wildlife. So, for instance, the Secretary of the Interior, Ryan Zinke, was just here in Wisconsin at Horicon Marsh not too long ago, and he presented a check for $35 million. And that comes from these sources of funds, Pittman Robertson and Dingell Johnson, or what people call the PR and DJ dollars. Those funds are, go into the state, and they fund a lot of what people want to see here: trails, boat ramps, habitat management, science, as well as fish cleaning stations and other and deer registrations and other things.
Let's squeeze in another phone call. Linda from Pewaukee, not surprisingly, wants to talk about wolves, and we'll take another question on that subject. Linda, you're on the morning show.
Hi. Well, it was more of a comment, actually, but I just wanted to say that this past month I volunteered for a wolf education presentation at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Sports Show. There was a panel, and there was a discussion. It was very well attended, much appreciated. People with different points of view sat down and listened, aired their feelings. People came up afterwards and thanked us. They said it was really nice. They really appreciated it. And so it was just an opportunity for people to actually listen and learn the facts. And real quickly, I would like to add that I do not expect my outdoor activities to be free. I pay fees for hiking and camping and other things, and I'm happy to do that because I think it's very important for our state. Thank you.
Linda, thanks so much for the phone call. Adina?
Well, thanks so much for that. I really appreciate that perspective and the work it sounds like you've been doing on education. And I think that it's a great point that if people listen more to each other, they can come to agreement in many cases. Not all the time, but it certainly helps. And to the point about hunting and fishing fees also being met at the same time by people paying fees to camp and to hunt, or sorry, to camp and to hike, I think that's great. And I think it's excellent to be thinking about where those funds can go in terms of helping to support those sports and recreation. When you look at the full budgets for wildlife management agencies, the fees that come in from state park user fees or other fees for canoeing and camping, they just don't add up in quite the same way that hunting and fishing fees add up. So people are still looking for how do we fund wildlife overall.
Our guest for the first part of this program has been Adina Rissman. Adina, thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Great to be here.
She is an associate professor of the Human Dimensions of Ecosystem Management in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Kate Archer Kent. When we come back, we'll have more on this topic with Teresa Stabeau. She is the R3 coordinator of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. That stands for Recruitment, Retention, and Reactivation. We'll ask her about that. But first, this news. It is the morning show. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Kate Archer Kent. We're talking about the decline of hunting in Wisconsin and indeed all across America and the dilemma that poses for conservation and wildlife management. Our guest for the remainder of the program is Teresa Stabeau. She is the R3 coordinator. That stands for Recruitment, Retention, and Reactivation at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. We do want to hear from you. Are you a hunter? Why or why not? Do you think it's necessary for people to hunt for wildlife conservation? If so, what hunting traditions have you followed? And if you're against hunting, we'd like to hear from you as well and what your reasons are for that. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Teresa, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, good morning. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And tell me exactly what an R3 coordinator does at the DNR. Those three R's, again, are recruitment, retention, and reactivation.
Right. An R3 coordinator is a term that we came up with, not we, but it's more of a nationwide plan right now to really get people interested back out on the land, back out on the water, hunting and fishing. And so what we're doing is to introduce people who maybe missed out as a youngster learning some of those outdoor skills like hunting and fishing.
And we've been talking this hour about that new survey by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service showing that today only about 5% of Americans 16 years of age or older actually hunt, a figure that's about half of what it was just a few decades ago. What's your reaction to that?
Well, that's definitely a concern because, as Adina mentioned, those license sales really have a big impact on our funding source to manage the lands and the waters and the fish and wildlife of Wisconsin. So when that funding level drops, we need to figure out, well, how are we going to do all these things? How are we going to take care of that fishery? How are we going to take care of those lands for wildlife? So what are we going to be doing to do that? A lot of that funding stream that helps manage our shooting ranges so that people mm-hmm. can learn to properly sight in their guns. They cover fish health assessments, monitoring. They help to operate our hatcheries and fish stocking. They sample for fish contaminants. We do a lot of different things with that money that people may not recognize. So when that funding stream starts to trickle off a little bit, we really are concerned that we aren't going to be able to do that. And the other reason that we're concerned is we just want more people out on the landscape. We want them to be out there observing what's happening, just as being another set of eyes to see how the quality of our habitats are faring, and also just to enjoy it, just to be part of that rich tradition that we've had for a long time. We would like them to join that.
Well, we've been talking about this this hour that even though fewer people are hunting, more and more people are outside. They're camping, they're kayaking, they're canoeing, they're taking pictures of wildlife, or as you mentioned, fishing. A substantial number of Wisconsin citizens fish.
That's true. So those are other segments of outdoor users. And we would like to just share in the responsibility for maintaining those lands that belong to all of us. It's part of the commons, the fish, the wildlife, all of those things that belong to all of us. So we form partnerships with other organizations to help get people back into hunting. Maybe they were raised vegetarian, so they never learned how to hunt or fish. Maybe they missed out. They didn't go through that natural progression of parent teaching child how to do these things. So we want to help provide a pathway for them to become a hunter or an angler.
And a lot of that is passed down from generation to generation. If you're a fisherman, chances are your father or your mother fished. Same thing if you're a hunter.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And looking at some money that's coming in to help us with wildlife conservation, U.S. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke presented almost $35 million in conservation and outdoor recreation grants to Wisconsin recently.
Fish and wildlife assets. A lot of the archery programs, hunting programs have atrophied and been replaced with other programs. So we're looking at public-private partnerships to bring a lot of those programs back to get the kids out to introduce them to the legacy that was given to us.
And some of that money is aimed at boosting interest in hunting amid the declining number of hunters. How do you see this grant impacting the current state of not only hunting in Wisconsin, but wildlife conservation in general?
Well, that has been our funding stream for a long time. You know, the Pittman-Robertson funds and Dingell-Johnson, also known as the Sport Fish Restoration funds, that funding is very important to us, not only to directly manage the land, but also to support programs that will introduce people to fishing and hunting. So we've partnered with Pheasants Forever, National Wild Turkey Federation. They've become part of our R3 team at DNR to help have these classes. And they're held community ed style. We've worked with the Urban Ecology Center. They've hosted our classes before in Milwaukee. We have had classes with the Driftless Folk School out near Viroqua and Lafarge. And those are just ways for us to help reach out to people who maybe did not come through the traditional path to learn these skills. But they do have, they're people who have a deep concern for knowing where their food comes from. They really want to have a role in bringing it home. They want to take part in that process.
Let's go to the phones. Kenneth in Janesville, you're on the morning show with Teresa Stabo.
Hello. I'm wondering if you people have arrived from another planet. I mean, in 2018, kids have got so many other things to do recreationally. And, you know, their parents don't have the money or the time, you know, to go fishing or hunting nowadays. You know, if there was a way to fish with a video game, maybe, or hunt with a video game, we might have an increase in the activity. But, you know, that's what's really going on.
Kenneth, thanks so much. We got it. Teresa, your response to that, and just for the record, I have seen video games based on deer hunting and fishing.
Right. That you know, that is a challenge, that there are distractions. There are a lot of choices about how people spend their time, and we're hoping that they will look to getting back outdoors and make that their choice. That's how they're going to use their disposable time. We do have a lot of disposable time. Just think of how much time I myself spend looking at Facebook, and it's just a black hole for time. So we're trying to help people just cut the cord or just turn off that gizmo and head outside. And we're meeting them through mobile devices ourselves, just helping to say, okay, that's where they are. So that's where we got to go to encourage them to sign up for one of our classes or call a friend and go outside.
Yeah, we need more real reality and less virtual reality. Mm-hmm. What efforts are you doing right now at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources to get people out fishing and hunting? I know that a number of the state parks, I think it's a couple of times a year, have free fishing weekends.
Right. Free fishing weekend it's a program that we've had since about 1986, and that's where we give people an opportunity to go out and give it a try at our state parks or just on their own. You don't need to attend an organized clinic, but if you yourself fish and you want to take somebody else who's never fished but they don't want to get soaked for a license right from the get-go, tell them, you know, first weekend in June, you can always go fishing without a fishing license. So that's, and those dates are on our website, but for this year, it's June 2nd and 3rd, I believe. So they could check our website for different fishing clinics on that day. We also have a program called Fishing in the Neighborhood, where we plant college students as interns, and they, with partner organizations like the Urban Ecology Center and Bay Beach Wildlife Sanctuary, mm-hmm. MSCR, Madison School and Community Recreation Program here in Madison, and Where Nature Center in Milwaukee, we have these FIN, you know, this Fishing in the Neighborhood, the acronym is FIN, so we call our FINterns, our interns, FINterns. So they have, they'll be setting up some programs, too, to help people learn how to fish through the summer. So, but as far as hunting goes, we have a number of classes that my colleagues are setting up around the state in Milwaukee, Madison, Viroqua, different places where they can learn how to hunt turkey, and they can learn how to hunt deer, other small game. So those are there are a lot of opportunities, and we really are reaching out to our younger members of the population.
Do you feel you're making progress reaching out to young people, or are they turning a deaf ear to you?
They're, you know, people are very much interested in. We often have waiting lists for the Learn to Hunt, for the Hunt for Food programs, and we also have, we have these other classes for fishing. They are very interested. They're very keen on knowing where their food comes from. So, as I said before, they really want to have a hand in obtaining it themselves. So, it's not only young people, but sometimes older people, too, who missed out for whatever reason. They were raising a family. They didn't have time to go out and do these things, and they didn't have someone tell them how to do it. So that's where...
And again, this is something that's passed down from generation to generation. And good luck with your efforts, Teresa Stabo.
Okay.
That was Teresa Stabo, the R3 coordinator. That's recruitment, retention, and reactivation at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. We also want to thank Adina Rissman, an associate professor of the Human Dimensions of Ecosystem Management in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, for her contributions to the first part of this show. The morning show is produced by Nyasia Ellison and Keely Boltina. Michelle Johnson is the executive producer. Coming up tomorrow at this time, it's a garbage dump that's twice the size of Texas, and it's in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and it is growing. We'll have a look at that floating plastic. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Kate Archer Kent on the Ideas Network.